facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fabulous Friday to you. It is October the 9th, 2020, and this is the show of record, Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Give us a call, 1-888-914-9149. Toll free, 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. At Cale Clark is my Twitter handle, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. You can also try the show account. Follow that one, too, at Cale Clark Show. Email always works as well, cale@relevantradio.com. And today is the feast day. It's actually the first year we're actually going to be able to celebrate the feast day of this saint, Saint John Henry Cardinal Newman. A huge inspiration to me personally, and I'm sure many of you out there as well, a towering figure in the history of the church over the last few hundred years. And I really want to dive into his life today and why it's important and how he really influenced me on my journey back into the church. He really pushed me over the edge and forced me to take a leap of faith. I'll tell you how that all came about, how that shook down later in the program. But first, I just want to give you an overview of his life, because it's rather unique that his feast day is today, October the 9th. And usually when a saint is canonized, their feast day is usually, unless there's like a major conflict on that day, like it belongs to another saint and, you know, there ain't enough room here for the two of us in this town kind of thing. Usually it's the day that they die, their heavenly birthday, if you will. That becomes their feast day. Not so in the case of Cardinal Newman. In fact, the reason why his feast day is today is because on this day, the 9th of October in 1845, that was the day he converted to Catholicism. And by the way, he was born in the year 1801 and he died in 1890. So 89 years of age when he passed away. And this is a really profound saint for a lot of reasons, especially for reasons of ecumenism. And you know, there's often a false understanding of the ecumenical movement that's out there. By the way, the ecumenical movement should be about reuniting all Christians in one church. It's not about agreeing to disagree. And we'll see how Cardinal Newman's life really plays into that as we go along. But let me just kind of give you an overview of his life really quickly in case you're not super familiar with him. And by the way, I'm not a Newman scholar by any means. I'm not an expert on his life. I need to learn much more about him myself. I'm not a philosopher. I'm not a historian, although he was very, very strong in both of those areas. I really need to learn more about him, but what I have learned about him has been incredibly impactful in my life, and I'll share with you what I know, which isn't much, but it might help you. So he was born to Anglican parents in London, and he had kind of what he called a first conversion when he was 15 years old. And that's what he kind of, he had this sort of inner haze around God's existence, and he began to gradually understand the emptiness, the ultimate emptiness of earthly things. And that kind of blew away the fog in his life and really focused his thoughts quite a bit. He started reading, especially reading the writings of the Calvinist thinker Thomas Scott. And that really helped Newman to refine his own thought process. And there were two phrases of Scott, Thomas Scott, that really resonated with Newman. And these became sort of touchstones of his life and of his thinking later on. The first was this: holiness rather than peace. I like that. That's a really good line. You can tweet that. Holiness rather than peace. Okay, that was the first line that Newman got from reading the Calvinist writer Thomas Scott. Holiness rather than peace. And then the second one is also really good. Growth is the only evidence of life. Growth is the only evidence of life. And that's a great line too. So tweetable, You know, it's important because if we are living, as we are, obviously we're still alive, if we're not growing in our faith, if we're not growing morally, intellectually, spiritually, we're really dying in a certain sense. And so growth throughout our lives, and especially our lives as Catholics, is super, super important. We've got to keep looking deeper into the mysteries. We've got to keep reaching greater heights of holiness in our own lives as well. So holiness rather than peace. And Jesus said, remember, I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. And sometimes even the members of one's own family become enemies in a certain sense because they're not happy if we take our relationship with Christ to the next level. And that certainly is the case oftentimes in the lives of converts to Catholicism. In 1825, Newman became an Anglican pastor. He had already, by the way, committed himself to apostolic celibacy. Even though he didn't need to do that, you know, as an Anglican, it was very, very common for Anglican clergy to marry. He had already decided to kind of free himself up for whatever God wanted of him, and he thought the best way to do that was to embrace celibacy. So he had done that prior to receiving holy orders in the Anglican Church. Not that they were valid holy orders, we'll get into that a little bit later, but he became an Anglican cleric. And in the following years, he really became one of the most celebrated leaders of what was called the Oxford Movement. And I'll explain a little bit about what the Oxford Movement is in just a moment. So the Oxford Movement rejected religious liberalism, and it tried to kind of bring about a renewal of the Anglican Communion along three lines. So the first thing they wanted to do was reestablish dogma. Okay, what does the faith teach? They wanted to get back to sacraments, which they felt had kind of fallen by the wayside. And in the Anglican Church of Newman's time, just as there is today, there's kind of what's called a low Anglicanism and then a high church Anglicanism. And so a high church Anglicanism would almost seem Catholic, you know, candles, incense, a liturgy that seems very Catholic. And then the lower church model, if you will, is kind of more like what you might find in an evangelical church. You know, liturgy is not emphasized. It's more about preaching from the scriptures. That's a gross caricature, but it's just a quick way to explain the difference. And so they're really into sort of a higher church movement, if you will, and they wanted to reestablish sacraments. However, they really wanted to maintain also that they're not Catholic. All right, they were accused of being, you know, they're accused of popery by their fellow Anglicans, these people that were in the Oxford Movement. And they're also called the Tractarians, by the way, because they released a series of tracts or documents about, you know, their thoughts and how they thought things should be going in the church. So they're accused of popery. They had to fight against that by saying, no, we're still not Catholic. We're anti-Catholic, if you will. So that was basically it. And for years, Newman was kind of part of this movement, one of its more leading lights. And the more, however, he studied history, and he had this very famous phrase that he would say later on, to be deep in history is to cease to be a Protestant. And really this started for him when he started to investigate the writings of the fathers of the church. The early Christian centuries gradually convinced him that, man, the early church was Catholic. I mean, these guys believed Catholic stuff, and why did we get rid of it, you know, in the Anglican Church? In 1843, he retracted all of his previous attacks against the Catholic Church, and he renounced his living. He was making his living as an Anglican minister, and he basically gave that up. He gave up his salary because he could no longer in good conscience carry on as an Anglican priest. And so he gradually, very slowly but surely, was coming back into the Catholic Church for the first time. During the final stage, when he was coming into the Catholic Church, he wrote a very important document called The Development of Christian Doctrine, an essay on the development of Christian doctrine. And in this document, he explained how the teachings of the Catholic Church, which developed over time, were not inventions. They weren't Catholic accretions to the gospel. They're not like barnacles that attach themselves to the hull of a ship. They are, in fact, natural unfoldings of what was already there. It's not they're not foreign teachings added on to the pure original gospel, but really just the fruit of the gradual understanding of the truth that was, you know, once for all given to the Church of Christ. And as one of the church fathers, Irenaeus, said, like a rich man depositing his money in the bank, Christ deposited the faith into the church, and we're sort of drawing out those riches throughout time and unfolding them. Or another analogy might be like a head of cabbage. You know, you sort of peel off the layers. You go deeper into it, but it's still the same cabbage. You know, it's just sort of this deposit of faith that we have, and we're just looking deeper and deeper into it. We're getting more and more insights as we go along, but we're not inventing anything, okay? And that's the essence of the development of Catholic doctrine. On October the 9th, 1845, which we celebrate today, this is the feast day of Cardinal Newman. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. On the 9th of October, 1845, after 5 hours spent in the rain, Dominic of the Mother of God, also known as Father Domenico Barberi, an Italian Passionist priest, who had heard, by the way, an inner voice many years earlier telling him that he would be a victim for the conversion of England to the Catholic faith. And by the way, he is now blessed Dominic of the Mother of God. So this very holy, very saintly Catholic priest, Father Domenico Barberi, was passing through Littlemore. And he said he sat down by the fire to dry out. It had been, as I said, it had been raining quite hard. He had been in the rain for 5 hours on his way back. So he's drying out by the fireplace. And he said, the door opened, and what an impression it made on me to see John Henry Newman suddenly appear, asking me to hear his confession so that he would be welcomed into the arms of the church. And there, by the fire, he began his general confession with extraordinary humility and devotion. And so Newman, at that moment, entered into the Catholic Church. And his conversion was absolutely, it just rocked the world. It made front page news on all the newspapers across Europe. This was big. A modern day example might be something like this. Imagine if Billy Graham, you know, the famed evangelical preacher, and who had all those Billy Graham crusades. They don't call them crusades anymore. They call them campaigns, obviously, because of the connotations. But, you know, preached in many stadiums around the world and tried to bring millions of people into an encounter with Christ. Imagine if Billy Graham had become Catholic at the height of his worldwide fame. That's the kind of impact that Newman's conversion had in the world and certainly on the Anglican Communion. Well, 2 years after this, 2 years after this moment, so this would be 1847, Cardinal Newman, well, he wasn't a cardinal yet, but he received priestly ordination in Rome, and he entered the Oratory of St. Philip Neri. He became an oratorian priest, and this is really the kind of charism that he adopted. He became an oratorian, and he was tasked eventually with bringing the oratory into England, and eventually he had to set up a Catholic university in Dublin later on. And so St. Philip Neri is an interesting saint, too. Love for Jesus, care for one's neighbor, and really a great spirit of humor and joy. And so that's what Newman did. That's the community that he joined. And he was very much misunderstood during those years. He was mercilessly attacked from non-Catholics and even from some Catholics. And so 30 years later, as he was, you know, obviously very advanced in age, Newman was, Pope Leo XIII made him a cardinal. And actually, he was the very first person on the list of new cardinals that he made that year. And even though Newman was not a bishop, he was made a cardinal. And on that day, the day that he was created cardinal, which was the 12th of May in 1879, he delivered in Rome a very famous speech, which was known as the Biglietto speech. And the Biglietto speech made some pretty big points and some pretty big news. And really, he proved to be a prophet, and not only of his own time, but really of our time too, because so much of what Newman had to say is so applicable today, so valid, even at this moment. He talked about the evils of the contemporary age, everything from what he called religious indifferentism to the reduction of faith to a private matter. And how often are we tempted with that today? How many voices would like us to just be quiet as Catholics and not raise our voices in the public square, not bring our faith to bear on the great matters of our times. And here's what Newman said in this speech. He said, "Liberalism in religion is the doctrine that there is no positive truth in religion, but that one creed is just as good as another," end of quote. Again, we see this all over the place. This is nothing more than what Pope Benedict called the dictatorship of relativism. You know, there is no absolute truth. There is no truth with a capital T. One person's faith is just as good as another. It doesn't matter. There are many ways up the mountain. And where I live in the, and this is tragic, in the Catholic, the so-called Catholic school system, and there are many faithful people in the system, in our Catholic school system, we have very often in many of the schools a poster that really gives this vibe of it doesn't really matter what faith you belong to. And it's sort of the golden rule in all these different religions. All these religions allegedly have something like the golden rule. Not quite. Jesus' version is much, much more challenging. But it's this whole idea that there are many paths up the mountain, but we're all going to end up in the same place. Newman says, nonsense. One of the things that Newman warned about in this speech is this. He said, "Another evil of liberalism is to maintain that revealed religion is not a truth, but a sentiment and a taste, not an objective fact, not miraculous." And Newman really fought against the anti-supernatural view that was in the world at his time in the 19th century. "And it's the right of each individual to make it say just whatever strikes his fancy." So, again, the concept of truth and the supernatural is so huge in Cardinal Newman. Big, big, big stuff. So obedience to objective truth is huge. And Cardinal Ratzinger, who's a big admirer of Newman, Pope Benedict XVI talked about this all the time, that Newman used conscience to find a way of obedience to the objective truth, and therefore obedience to God. We're going to play a really quick soundbite from Pope Benedict at the beatification of Cardinal Newman that that happened in Birmingham, England. Listen to this as we go to break.
Cardinal Newman's motto, "Cor ad cor loquitur," or "Heart speaks unto heart," gives us an insight into his understanding of the Christian life as a call to holiness, experienced as a profound desire of the human heart to enter into intimate communion with the heart of God. He reminds us that faithfulness to prayer gradually transforms us into the divine likeness. As he wrote in one of his many fine sermons, "A Habit of Prayer," the practice of turning to God and the unseen world in every season, in every place, in every emergency, prayer, I say, has what may be called a natural effect in spiritualizing and elevating the soul. A man is no longer what he was before. Gradually, he is imbibed a new set of ideas and become imbued with fresh principles. Today's gospel tells us that no one can be the servant of two masters, and Blessed John Henry's teaching on prayer explains how the faithful Christian is definitively taken into the service of the one true master, who alone has a claim to our unconditional devotion.
Okay, that was Pope Benedict XVI at the beatification of Cardinal Newman. And of course, he is now canonized. Today is the feast day of St. John Henry Newman. And we'll be back with more on The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio just after this message.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's The Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's the feast day of St. John Henry Newman, Cardinal Newman. And what an incredible saint he is. And he had such a profound influence on my life. Maybe he had one on yours too. Give us a call and let us know. 1-888-914-9149. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And there's also the show account, Cale Clark Show, at Cale Clark Show. And our producer, Lucas Holt, has put up a very unflattering photo of me playing tennis. It's really not me. It's not me. It's just a meme that he found. But nonetheless, it's not appreciated, Lucas. No, I'm only kidding. No, it was very funny.
Yeah, if you want to check out the photo of Cale from his old college days, the tennis courts, go to the show account on Twitter.
Oy. Anyways, having said that, we definitely want to put the ball in your court. You can call us and let us know what you think about St. John Henry Newman. And one of the reasons why we do what we do at the Cale Clark Show is the exact point that Newman once made, in which he said this. He said that the role of the laity is absolutely fundamental. And he said that he wanted lay people in the church who, quote, know their religion, who know what they believe and what they do not believe, who know their creed so well that they can account for it, who know history so well that they can defend it, end of quote. And in fact, Pope Pius XII said this. Not only would Newman one day be canonized, he said that one day, without doubt, Newman will be a doctor of the church. So we'll see as time goes on whether Pius XII was prophetic about that. Now, I've also said, as I alluded to before the break, that Cardinal Newman had a profound influence on my own life and my own reversion back to the faith. And I've told you guys before that sort of a seminal moment for me was during my time away from the church, I became an evangelical minister. I was an agnostic, came back to Christ in university through Protestant campus ministry. And one thing led to another. I went to a Protestant seminary, and I started ministering in the Christian Reformed congregation, the Christian Reformed stream. And it wasn't that I had a background in, you know, really there's nothing drawing me to that other than that I had a professor when I was in seminary who was also a pastor in the Christian Reformed Church. And he was looking for an associate, and he asked me if I would, you know, consider doing this. So I applied for it. I wound up working there. And even while I was still in seminary, I was doing pastoral work there. And a lot of people from a Dutch background, and of course there are a lot of Dutch Catholics out there as well, but Dutch Reformed people tended to be the main body of folks in this congregation. And it's funny because my name is Cale, spelled with a C, of course. One of the things that sort of staples of their tradition was kale and potatoes. Kale, of course, with a K. And potatoes. And when I got married to Patricia, many of these guys came to my wedding. And, you know, there's a tradition, of course, that when the bride, you know, sort of throws her bouquet to all the single ladies, and whoever catches it is allegedly the next person who's going to get married. Well, we did something like that for the guys at our wedding, too. My friends from the Dutch Reformed Church, from the Christian Reformed Church, gave me a bouquet of kale. And I threw it to the guys, all the single guys, and I forget who caught it. I think it was my brother-in-law. So anyways, that was that. And they always used to razz me about that, about my name. But anyways, one of the things that, a couple things happened to me. Well, so while I was on this journey, I was very happy there. I was preaching the word of God. I was really enjoying it. The people were amazing, wonderful people of faith. And I was having a great time. And I began to be drawn back to the church. Obviously God had a plan, but this wasn't really my doing. It was God providentially putting things and people in my path that got me back home eventually. And one of the things that happened was I went to, and this is around the time when I was sort of starting to consider the church again, I went to a conference at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, and Relevant Radio's own Patrick Madrid was one of the speakers there. And this was back in, I would say, 2003. And at that time, I'd been kind of investigating Catholic teaching for the first time, and you know, since I was a kid, and I was starting to think, wow, like there's actually a lot of biblical evidence for Catholicism, and a lot of this stuff is sounding very convincing to me. Might it be true? But at the time, I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe I could just take what I'm learning here and sort of apply this in my Protestant context. Maybe I don't really need to think about converting. Well, the talk that I attended very providentially by Patrick Madrid really kind of blew me away because he was quoting from one of the Vatican II documents, Lumen Gentium, which is the document on the church. It's called The Light of the Nations. That's what its English title is. In Lumen Gentium, chapter 14, I will never, ever forget. It was so profound. And I'd never read this before. And Patrick quoted it. And he said this. He said, "The Sacred Council wishes to turn its attention firstly to the Catholic faithful. Basing itself upon sacred scripture and tradition, it teaches that the church, now sojourning on earth as an exile, is necessary for salvation. Christ, present to us in his body, which is the church, is the one mediator and the unique way of salvation. In explicit terms, he himself affirmed the necessity of faith and baptism, and thereby affirmed also the necessity of the church. For through baptism, as through a door, men enter the church," and obviously women too. "Whosoever, therefore, knowing," and this is really the line that really got me, "whosoever, therefore, knowing that the Catholic Church was made necessary by Christ, would refuse to enter or to remain in it, could not be saved." And that really hit me like a ton of bricks. Wow. If you know, and if you don't know, that's one thing. If you're still, you know, unsure, if you're thinking about it, if you're investigating it, that's one thing. But if you got to the point where you've got enough evidence that you think you know that the Catholic Church is made necessary by Christ, but you either refuse to enter her, or if you are a Catholic, you refuse to remain in the church, you cannot be saved. Why is this? Because to reject the church is to reject Christ, because the church is his mystical body. You can't have Jesus without the church, ultimately. Because Jesus comes to us in three ways, right? He came to us first in his physical body, his incarnate body, which he got from the Virgin Mary. That's what the Annunciation is all about, and that's what the birth of Christ at Christmas reminds us of, the Incarnation. But he also comes to us in the church, which is his mystical body, and he also comes to us in his Eucharistic body. I guess you could say that Christ comes to us, in a sense, in a tripartite way. And we've got to have all three, really, to have the fullness of Christ. And of course, you can only get the Eucharist in the church. And really, you can only get the life of Christ ultimately through baptism. That's how you become a Christian. That's also made necessary by the church. It all goes hand in hand here. And so when I heard that, it really set me back, and really kind of, it was like a bucket of cold water was poured on my head. It really woke me up and got me thinking. I kind of continued on this process, but I was still in the Christian Reformed denomination. And one day I went to a conference in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with some people from the church, with the pastor and some other workers at the church. And by the way, when I say church, I mean the congregation. Only really the Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches of the East can actually be called churches because they have valid sacraments. But it's another story for another day. You know what I'm talking about. And so we went to Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's really the headquarters of the Christian Reformed denomination. And just like, as Rome is to us as Catholics, Grand Rapids, Michigan is to the Christian Reformed Church in the United States. And it was an interesting conference. It was all about worship. And while we were there, a couple things happened. I think that's when I found out that I probably have sleep apnea. This is a total rabbit trail sidebar here, but I just got diagnosed with sleep apnea. Really, my first hint of it happened at this conference, because we all kind of crammed into this hotel room, and a few of us stayed in the same room to save money. And that's when I found out I snored at night. I didn't even know before I got married. And one of the guys who was on the trip, Brad, he just woke me up in the middle of the night screaming at me, shut up, stop snoring. I guess I was just really sawing logs. He was throwing pills at me. And yeah, anyways, just a few weeks ago, back to the present day, 2020, I just got diagnosed with sleep apnea. I don't know if any of you out there have it. I have a CPAP machine now. I mean, I kind of look like, Bane from The Dark Knight Rises. I put this thing on my face, Gotham, it's something else. And I've had to get used to that, but I think I'm sleeping a little bit better. So I'm very thankful. You need to stay alive. If you have sleep apnea, please do something about it. It can be a very, very serious condition. A lot of people have it and don't know it. Total rabbit trail there, total sidebar. Let's get back to the main thing I want to say. So while we were in Grand Rapids, we went to the famous Erdmann's Discount Theological Bookstore. And a lot of you folks out there know of Erdmann's Publishing House. They publish a lot of great theological books, the William B. Erdmann's Publishing Company. And they don't just publish Protestant stuff. They publish some Catholic stuff, but it's hard to find. And so they have this very famous Discount Theological Bookstore where you can get a lot of their great titles for cut-rate prices. So we were really excited to go there and get some books. So we went there, and just very, very providentially. And you know, it's the little things sometimes. I found in this place, on a random shelf, two books about and by Cardinal Newman. One of the books was a compilation of sermons and writings that Newman had made about Mary. And it's very, very beautiful. And these sermons actually went back to his Anglican days. He would preach about the Blessed Virgin. And he had some poetry dedicated to her and a lot of great Catholic stuff in there, too, from his Catholic days. That was a beautiful book. And then another book that I found, and I picked this one up, too, and this was really a game changer for me. Sometimes you just find a book, and it is an absolute game changer. And for me, this was a book by Father Stanley Yockey, who has deceased. He passed away in 2009. Brilliant, brilliant priest and intellect, taught for many years at Seton Hall University in New Jersey, and he taught about faith and science. He's just a massive intellect. And he wrote this book called Newman's Challenge, a collection of essays, and it was just so powerful. And there was one chapter in there in particular that really just blew my mind and push me over the edge that I had to go into the Catholic Church. I had to go back to the Catholic Church. I couldn't just buy into Catholic teachings but remain in the Protestant world, because this is what Newman himself had to do. And there's an entire chapter in this book by Father Stanley Yockey called Newman's Challenge, and it's all about the letters that Cardinal Newman wrote on the eve of his conversion, on the eve of his reception into the Catholic Church. And we already said that today, October the 9th, is his feast day, because this was the day he was received into the church. Father Dominic heard his confession. But the night before, on October the 8th, 1845, he wrote letters to some of his very best friends. You know, we're not really into letter writing anymore. We're into maybe, iMessaging, tweeting, emailing, maybe. But, he actually sat down and wrote about 20 letters that evening to some of his best friends, a lot of whom were partners with him in the Oxford movement, trying to recapture the roots of Christianity in the Anglican communion. He realized it wasn't possible. He couldn't do it. He had to become Catholic. So he wrote to all these people, and in every single one of these letters, he had the phrase, the one true fold. Capital letters, capital O, capital T, capital F, the one true fold. And of course, that's a reference to the sheepfold. And he's referring to the Catholic Church as the one true church. And a lot of biographers don't even mention these letters that he wrote. But Father Stanley Yockey, I gave some highlights from them. And it's very, very profound. So I just want to read to you a couple of quotes from Newman, these letters that he wrote. One of the letters that he wrote was to, who did he write this to? His sister, Jemima. And he said this, if I thought that any other body but that which I recognize to be Catholic were to be recognized by the Savior of the world, I would not have left that body. So what's he saying there? If I thought that any other church would actually be recognized by Jesus Christ himself, I would never have left it. I would have stayed put where I was. He also said this. He said it would have been a betrayal of truth. And again, it's truth with a capital T. A betrayal of truth writ large, had he kept from others his most considered conviction that the Church of Rome was in fact the church that Jesus established, the Catholic Church. He told his sister he could not live with a guilty conscience, with the guilt that he would have had to live with if he deprived other people of the truth. And here's what he said, quote, "What a doom would have been mine if I had kept the truth, with a capital T, a secret in my heart, when I knew which the one church was and which was not part of the one church, if I had suffered friends and strangers to die in an ignorance from which I might have relieved them. End of quote. And as Father Stanley Yaki says, he knew which was the pain to be dreaded more, the temporal pain that he would feel because he had to pain others, or the eternal pain that he would eventually suffer by choosing not to pain them and thereby not to inspire others to convert as he did. That is so powerful. And, you know, what a doom would have been mine, you know, if I hadn't tried to tell other people about the truth that I found in the Catholic Church. And yeah, it's going to upset your apple cart. Yeah, it might upset you personally, or it might upset your loved ones. But guess what? If it's true, you've got to do something about this. And I can't live with myself if I don't tell you this. What a doom would be mine on the judgment day if I don't tell you the truth about this, because it's part of the gospel. The church, the good news of the church, is part of the good news of Jesus Christ. So we see here the concern, the solicitude that Newman had for the eternal salvation of other people. He had an immense capacity for friendship. I mean, you can see this, you know, he's writing 20 letters to some of his best friends the night before he converted. Now, he lost a lot of those friends when he came into the church. He lost almost everything, and he was willing to do that, to tell them the truth. And he knew that the end of friendship, if you're going to be friends with somebody, if you carry friendship to its logical conclusion, a friend wants to give all good things and share all good things with their friends, right? We tell our friends about, hey, man, the best restaurant in town, you know, if you want Italian, is this one, you know, or I just saw this great movie. Check it out, man. I'm loving my car. Maybe you should buy one. You know, there's so many things that we want to share with our friends. We always want to share good things with our friends. Well, the ultimate good that we want to share with them is God. We want to share eternal salvation with them. And Newman knew that the church was the universal sacrament of salvation on earth. And as Father Stanley Yaki says, you know, a lot of Newman's letters about this stuff sort of were unearthed in the 1960s. And that was a time when, you know, there was like sort of an ecumenical euphoria. Everybody thought, oh, yeah, we're going to reunify all Christians. Well, not so fast. And again, true ecumenism, regathering Christians into one body, it's not about agreeing to disagree. It's about reuniting them into one visible church, the church that Jesus founded. Incredible. We're going to have much more about Newman after this short break. If you want to call in, maybe you've attended a Newman Center on campus. Maybe that influenced you while you were in university. Give us a shout, 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
All right, Lucas, I don't know if you did that on purpose, you know, playing the weekend as we're about to enter into the weekend, but that was a nice move if that was intentional. Anyways, welcome back to the Cale Clark Show. It's the feast day of St. John Henry Cardinal Newman, and we're going to play another audio clip for you from Pope Benedict at the beatification of Newman in Birmingham, England. You say, well, why don't you play something from the canonization? Well, because this one was actually done in English, because it was done, of course, in England. So here's Pope Benedict.
Newman helps us to understand what this means for our daily lives. He tells us that our divine master has assigned a specific task to each one of us, a definite service committed uniquely to every single person. I have my mission, he wrote. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons. He has not created me for naught. I shall do good. I shall do his work. I shall be an angel of peace, a preacher of truth in my own place, if I do but keep his commandments and serve him in my calling.
beautiful words from Pope Benedict XVI, our beloved Pope Emeritus, talking, really quoting from Newman about how we have a purpose in life. We have a call. God has a definite plan for us, a definite service that he wants us to undertake, as Newman said. And one of the things that God wanted Cardinal Newman to do was to try to draw some of his fellow Anglicans from the Oxford movement that he was such a big part of into the Catholic Church. And that's what he tried to do. And so really the Oxford movement was really big into what was called the branch theory. They thought there were like three branches of the church that Jesus founded, which would be the Catholic Church, the Anglican Communion, and the Orthodox Churches of the East. But Newman came to see that really there's not three branches. There's one tree, and there's one true church, the Catholic Church, one true fold, as he liked to call it. Because he said, just using pure logic, that if there is revelation, if God has revealed his truth to the world, there has to be an authentic and unfailing interpreter of that revelation for the world. It has to appear. And Newman had to try to impress, as Father Stanley Yockey said in his book, he had to try to impress on his fellow, his friends from the Oxford movement, that the voice of Jesus Christ cannot be echoed by churches that contradict one another. Churches that contradict one another about essential truths that we need to know can't possibly all be from Christ. You know, is baptism necessary for salvation? You know, who can be baptized? That's an important question. And people have different, answers about this. And so we see lots of disagreements about major issues. You know, is the Eucharist really the body and blood of Christ, or is it purely a symbol? That matters. That really matters. And again, Newman knew that the voice of Jesus Christ could not be echoed by churches that contradict one another. And one time before he came into the Roman Catholic Church, Newman went on a trip to Rome, and he sort of poked his head into some churches and went to see a mass in 1833. And he wrote this to his mother after attending this mass. He said, "As I looked on and saw the Holy Sacrament offered up and the blessing given, and I recollected that I was in church, I could only say in perplexity my own words, 'How shall I name thee? Light of the Wide West or heinous error seat?'" So he's basically saying there's really only two options here. Either the Catholic Church really is the light of the West, the light of the world, or it is the seat of error. Both cannot be true. Either Jesus is present in the Eucharist or he isn't, and that matters. Is it true? Truth matters, absolutely, and Newman knew that. And so Newman would tell people, unless you see, unless you hear, you know, the voice of Jesus Christ speaking through the Church of Rome, it doesn't make any sense to enter it. That's really the only good reason, because you think it is the one true church. Otherwise, you're doing it for purely human reasons. And by the same token, as Father Stanley Yockey said, it's one's God-given duty, if you're on the path to Rome, to follow through with that. If you see that that's where the truth is leading, you've got to do it, even though it may come at great personal cost to you. And in fact, one situation that Newman found himself in after he became Catholic was he had a friend, the Marquise de Salvo, and she was a cousin of a good pal of Newman's, and she was married to a Sicilian nobleman, and she was thinking about becoming Catholic, but she was afraid about what it would do, you know, to her family life, you know, because she knew that a lot of her family members would be very upset if she became Catholic. And so Newman wrote to her on December the 18th, 1845, and he said this: "I earnestly exhort you to join the Catholic Church. It is necessary for your salvation, considering your present state of mind," end of quote. So what is he saying there? He's saying that she had enough evidence at that point. She knew that the Catholic faith was true, and she actually believed it was true, but she was afraid to enter it because she was afraid about, you know, what her family would say, how that might affect relations with her husband, that sort of thing. And so Newman said this to her concerns. He said this, quote, God will support you under every trial he puts upon you, and you will have the strength of the whole church and of all saints who ever lived. End of quote. So he basically removes the psychological issues that she's dealing with and gets straight to the point. He's like, yeah, you might have some issues here on a human level, and you might go through some trials, but God is going to support you. And you're not alone in this. You've got the church on your side. You've got all the saints and angels praying for you. And so straight talk from Cardinal Newman. He removes the excuses of somebody who knew that the church was made necessary by Christ, as Vatican II would go on to say. And this person was, I don't know if I should enter it. And I think that she did eventually enter the Catholic Church. And really, that's why I entered the church. It wasn't that I was unhappy where I was. But once I saw that it was true, I had to do something about it. And I knew that it was a salvation issue for me because I knew too much. I believed it was true. And you know what? For a lot of people, they're not 100% sure. And they want to have every single little problem worked out before they come into the church. But sometimes these things can be smokescreens. Newman had another friend that his name was Hanmer, Anthony John Hanmer. And he was an Anglican priest, and he was sort of interested in becoming Catholic. But he wanted to clear up all the problems that he had with issues in church history. And a lot of these things were like really extreme cases. And he's like, you know, if this happened in church history, I can't possibly join this group. And I was like, no. Like, don't worry about that. The second thing he told him was that when you feel a call to the church, if it's a nagging thing, if it keeps going on, that's a sign, you know, that it's God who's calling you. It's not a momentary thing, but it's God's grace pulling you along. And we need God's grace. It's not just an intellectual exercise, but we need God's grace. We need faith. We need to take a step of faith in the direction that the evidence is pointing us. We don't put our minds on the shelf, but we have to. We're not going to have every single issue worked out before we come into the church in many cases. G.K. Chesterton, another great British convert, same thing. He didn't have everything worked out. He still had a lot of questions about Catholicism, but he had seen enough evidence that he was like, you know what, if the church is right about X, Y, and Z, I'm going to trust that she's right about the other things too, and I will get the answers eventually. It's kind of faith-seeking understanding, as St. Augustine really wanted. To say, and one of the big things that he postulated as well. One of Newman's great friends was Edward Pusey, who was over 50 years, the professor of Hebrew at Oxford University. He was in the Oxford movement with Newman, and he just couldn't get that Newman became Catholic. He just thought it was like, you know, it was kind of like choose your own adventure. Okay, that's working for you, but I'm going to stay Anglican. He's like, no. I didn't do it because I like it better. I didn't just transfer to another part of the vineyard, as he put it. It's because it's true. And he would write to him and he would say, listen, you know, Edward, here's what I do every day. He says, I'm in a house in which Christ is always present just as he was to his disciples and where one can go in from time to time throughout the day to gain strength from him. And that makes me bold and urgent. And he's talking about the Eucharist, of course, in the tabernacle. Jesus is here. And that's what makes it so different. If Christ is present in the Eucharist, we've got everything that we need. This is true. It's either true or it isn't true. And Newman, of course, believed that it was. I could go on for hours about Newman, but we've run out of time here for this episode and for this week on The Cale Clark Show. If you missed an episode, of course, you can always download the podcast or stream it on relevantradio.com or through the app or through your podcast provider of choice. I want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Patrick Alog screening the calls. Timmery's up next. Have a great weekend, everybody. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.